Next, we are going to discuss an innovative business model in Aberdeen. With us for that is Travis Kiefer. He is a South Dakota native who graduated from Stanford, worked in Silicon Valley, returned to his home state. We're going to hear all about makerspaces. Travis joins us from Aberdeen. Welcome to Dakota Midday.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you.
So let's start with the overview for people who don't know what a makerspace is. Tell us what it looks like inside.
Yeah, so what a makerspace is a place where people can actually go and make things and includes tools, what you might normally see are, you know, hammers and sewing machine, things like that. And the focus of what we're doing with our makerspace is something on microelectronics. And so what that means is we have Arduinos and Raspberry Pis and soldering stations. And so you can work with the little electronics that power pretty much everything these days.
So I know what a soldering station might look like, but what was the other, Raspberry Pi, did you say? Tell me that. You better tell me what that is, because it's just making me hungry, because I don't know. So.
Yes. Well, you can't quite eat a Raspberry Pi.
Okay, good.
in this case, yes. But what Arduino and Raspberry Pi are these microcontrollers, or basically little computers that you can program to do different things. And so you can program them to open and close your garage door, to lock and unlock your door. A microcontroller is kind of involved in all of those different processes. And so a Raspberry Pi and Arduino are just two different types that you yourself can program, and they're available for anyone to kind of pick up and play with.
So what do I do that with that then when I pick it up? Is this technology that you helped innovate?
No, so I didn't make a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino. They're actually made by a couple of different companies, but they're available for pretty much anyone to play with. And the whole point of them is to be kind of open hardware and open software based, so that anyone can play with them and hack them and do these kind of nifty tricks and whatnot that they want to do on an open platform.
So who's this is your grand opening is today, right?
Yes.
Who are you reaching out to become a member? Because this is membership based.
Yes, it is. And the type of people we want involved is anyone in the community who's interested in kind of getting involved and playing with microelectronics. And so you have people who you know, are looking at a career change and wanting to kind of get in more of like a robotics or electronics field. They are absolutely welcome. You have the person who has an idea and doesn't know how to bring it to life. They can come in and work with people who, you know, have a little bit of experience in all the different components so that they can kind of bring that idea to life. And then students, you know, anyone who has an interest in microelectronics, any kind of geek culture, programming, software engineering, gaming in particular. So anyone who has a kid who's playing Minecraft, for example, would absolutely fit in some kind of makerspace like what we're doing.
Are you going to have classes and workshops to sort of help people enter into, you know, the area of microelectronics? Or are you kind of searching for people who already sort of know what they're doing and come on their own time schedule?
Yeah, we're looking for both. And for us, when it comes to classes, we absolutely want to teach some classes. And so for myself and a couple of others who have been involved in this field for some time and know kind of the lay of the land, we would love to kind of extend our knowledge and education to others who are interested. And really that's I think, the most exciting part about a makerspace is that you can get like-minded people into the same room regardless of their background or their experience and learn from each other and kind of hack on things together. So that, you know, you may know a little bit about one thing and the other person knows a little bit about another thing, but the two of you combined can bring this great new idea to life. And so when it comes to the classes, it all depends on what the membership is and what people in the community want.
Sure. Talk to us about the value of sort of tinkering, or as Kurt Vonnegut used to say, farting around with this kind of technology and with giving yourself the time to sort of mess around.
Yeah. In today's fast-paced society, it's fun to kind of take a step back and just do something for fun. And so what we wanted to do is bring that playfulness and bring that imagination into a safe space. And so that's why we called the makerspace Create, because we wanted to have an environment where people could feel comfortable to just create things. And the idea for us is making it so that, you know, anyone, anywhere can just have an idea and be imaginative and be playful and see things come to life in the real world. And so for us, that's kind of what this is all about, is having that safe space where you can just play a little bit and create.
What are some of the personal characteristics, if you were, that you would need to develop in order to sort of embrace innovation and creativity? Patience comes to mind. What comes to your mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a thirst. A thirst mm-hmm. for solving a problem or being curious about something. Being open to not succeeding the first time you do it. A lot of times we have, experienced individuals who are afraid to fail or are afraid to not get it right the first time. And, you know, Thomas Edison didn't say he failed at making a light bulb, what was it, 10,000 times. He just found 10,000 ways not to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's just that next time that could be the trick to getting you know, the solution you're looking for. And so with that patience comes, you know, a lot of curiosity and also just a willingness to try and to fail and to learn. Because it's not failure as in bad. It's failure as in, well, this approach didn't work. Let's try a different one.
Where did you pick up your sort of values and understanding of failure?
Yeah, that's a really good question. For myself, I think it came from growing up on a farm where, it didn't matter in terms of how many times it took you to get to the right solution in terms of fixing something or getting something right. You just had to make do with what you had and fix what you could with the resources you had. And there was no such thing as failure in that sense. It was really ingenuity, actually, if you solved the problem with fewer things than you thought you needed.
Tell me about your own work with elder care. I was reading a little bit about that, mm-hmm. and it sounded fascinating. Let's talk about that for a few minutes.
Oh, absolutely. So my background is actually my mother had worked in senior living, particularly assisted living, when I was a little kid. And so I was actually very familiar with the challenges and opportunities that come with aging. And so for myself, as a person who was really interested in technology and wanting to see how I could apply software engineering, creating products, things like that to solving real human problems of, you know, dignity or a loss of independence or autonomy, those kind of things that come up when you're thinking about mom, dad, grandpa, and grandma and their aging, for me, trying to combine the two felt like a really interesting opportunity to create some kind of solution and do something that could make aging a little bit more dignified or make it so that these individuals could live in their own homes for a little bit longer or do something in a way that they have the ability to maintain their independence for a bit longer. And so I started doing some research into the space when I moved back. I ended up talking to a local assisted living facility called Angel House. I was meeting with their executive director, Nathan Gelhouse, and we were talking back and forth about ways technology could improve his operations and make it so his quality of care could be improved. And technology, his background was also an interest in technology and the way it could improve his operations. And so we just started coming up with ideas, and then I started building them and ended up becoming a company.
What do some of those solutions look like?
So we make a lot of passive sensors. The idea is that we don't want to force someone to wear something if they don't want to. And really, when it comes to individuals, particularly those with advanced dementia or advanced Alzheimer's, their ability to remember things is very limited, or new things in particular. And so what we wanted to do was create a smart environment that could figure out if this was a situation that required attention. And so we've got a bunch of different sensors that we can put in a bed or a chair. And so, for example, let's say your grandpa gets up in the middle of the night. He has Alzheimer's. He uses a walker, but he has to use the restroom, and sometimes he forgets that he has to use the walker. Well, what our system can do is notice that it's the middle of the night, that you've gone from a horizontal position to a vertical position, and we can notify a staff member that it looks like you're getting up, and we can go and assist you to make sure that you can make it to the bathroom with no issues. And so what I like to say is that we give existing staff members superpowers. We make it so that they can help and assist individuals in one of these facilities without having to make rounds or having to kind of make guesswork about when a situation might require attention and kind of reduce the incidence of unwitnessed falls, for example.
And this is technology that exists and is being used in South Dakota today.
Yes, actually, we... Excitingly, we did our first install 2 weeks ago, and so we're starting to learn and starting to kind of understand the daily, you know, flow and patterns. And we're applying our own kind of like learning algorithms to see how we can improve their operations. But yeah, we're pretty excited that we're in our first facility.
It's a little bit thrilling to think about what could happen next, isn't it? Just to consider the possibilities of what could change as that technology advances.
Yeah, it's to me, it's really exciting because it's this incredible opportunity to see, you know, the ways in which you can use technology to make someone's quality of life better.
Why did you come back to South Dakota for this work? You could pretty much live anywhere you wanted right now.
And actually, that's why I moved back. I used to have this belief that in order to build a technology company, I had to be in Silicon Valley. And that isn't true. In fact, with, you know, the right skill set, you can pretty much do any company anywhere. And what better place than the place that I call home and the place I missed when I was out in Silicon Valley? And so for me, the move back was actually quite natural and quite obvious once I realized I could do the work I wanted to do anywhere. And so for me, it meant, you know, going from car horns when I wake up to car horns when I went to sleep. That was Silicon Valley. I have birds chirping when I wake up and birds chirping when I go to sleep, and it's absolutely wonderful.
All right, we just have about a minute or two left, and I have to ask you about running and marathons because you have a little bit of history there. So I'm giving you permission to brag a little bit about your accomplishment in your running shoes. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I don't generally like to brag. Really like focusing on the good work that I like to do, but I'll take a moment and indulge. So
inspire. Think of it inspiring. Go ahead.
I ended up running a marathon on every continent, including Antarctica. And the funny thing about Antarctica is that after running it, and it was, you know, daylight 24/7, and so you could, you know, depending on where you were looking in the sky, was how it correlated with the time of day. But when I came back to South Dakota afterwards, it was colder here than it was in Antarctica. Exactly. Crazy. And so to me, that just is a testament to our hardiness as a people.
There you have it. There's your little dose of inspiration today. Sometimes things that you don't think are possible happen, and they're done by South Dakotans like Travis. Travis Kiefer, thank you so much for joining us. We'll put a link up to your makerspace in Aberdeen after the program at sdpb.org/Dakota Midday so you can check it out for yourself. We thank you for your time, sir.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.